This is John Daly in the radio newsroom of the United States Senate, just across the hall from the galleries of the Senate chamber itself. In less than half an hour on this historic and eventful morning of the 16th of May, 1868, Andrew Johnson, President of the United States, may be removed from office, convicted of high crimes and misdemeanors. In less than 30 minutes, the people of the United States may have a new president, the Honorable Benjamin Wade, Senator from Ohio and President of the United States Senate. The hour of decision is at hand. At the stroke of noon, Chief Justice Salmon P. Chase will mount the rostrum, reconvene the Senate as a court of impeachment, and each senator in turn will cast his vote.
May 16, 1868, Washington, D.C. You are there.
Washington. Andrew Johnson, the President of the United States, is impeached. The Senate is preparing to vote for acquittal or conviction. The fate of Andrew Johnson, Chief Magistrate of the world's greatest democracy, is at stake. CBS takes you back to witness the closing minutes of the trial of Andrew Johnson for high crimes and misdemeanors. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there...
You are there.
You are there is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now...
The radio newsroom of the United States Senate and John Daly.
The drama of the 19th century is about to enter a new stage. The drama that began with the surrender of Lee at Appomattox, that was heightened by the bullet that ended the life of President Lincoln. And this drama reached its climax when Congress, determined to avenge the devastation and slaughter of the war, turned its anger on President Johnson for advocating Lincoln's policy of a charitable peace based upon his well-remembered words, with malice towards none. Now the final day of this trial without precedent has come, and the voting will begin in a matter of moments. Rumors are flying thick and fast throughout the Capitol. Quincy Howe has spent this busy day circulating among the senators, who, sitting as a jury in accordance with the Constitution, will soon pass judgment on President Andrew Johnson. He has just returned to the newsroom. Quincy, what's the feeling downstairs? Will the president be acquitted or convicted, and how will the balloting go?
Right up to this last moment, John, the radical Republican leaders have never doubted they could command the two-thirds vote of the Senate required for conviction. These radical Republicans belong to the extreme wing of their party, as you know. And they're called radical because they want to impose a hard peace on the defeated southern states. But now that the hour of decision draws near, the outcome has suddenly become doubtful. The radical Republicans can count on 35 votes. They need 36, or just one vote more. Seven Republican senators have either announced that they'll vote for acquittal or they've just said nothing. Senators Trumbull, Fessenden, Van Winkle, and Fowler definitely favor acquittal. So does Senator Grimes of Iowa. But Grimes is so ill that he probably won't be able to take his seat this afternoon. The two other doubtful senators, the men who hold the fate of President Andrew Johnson in their hands, are Senator Henderson of Missouri and Senator Ross of Kansas. The radical Republicans must get one of those two wavering votes in order to oust Johnson and put through their plan to subjugate the South. Neither Henderson nor Ross is on the floor of the Senate chamber right now. I understand they're both in the corridor outside the Senate lounge downstairs. Ken Roberts is down there, too. He's been trying to get them to the microphone, so come in, Ken Roberts.
It's absolutely impossible to get near Senators Henderson and Ross right now. They're both surrounded by radical Republican leaders who are ultimately begging, pleading, arguing, threatening, cajoling. Perhaps later we can get Henderson or Ross to our microphone, but right now we have Congressman Thaddeus Stevens of Pennsylvania, the man who, above all others, has been behind this move to impeach President Johnson. Congressman Stevens is convalescing from a recent illness, and two guards are carrying him in a chair. Mr. Stevens, will the president be convicted?
What president?
President Johnson, of course.
Oh, you mean the man who is now performing the function of president? Of course he'll be convicted. He entered upon that office through the foul door of assassination, and he'll leave it by the back stairs of shame.
And if the Senate convicts President Johnson and Senator Wade takes his place...
I assure you that'll happen.
Well, if it does, would you still insist that only Congress can reconstruct the southern states, or will you allow the new president to set the policy of reconstruction?
We'll dig that hole when we get a new shovel. As to the southern states, I recognize no such thing as a...
Thank you, Senator Wade of Ohio. I still can't get Senators Ross and Henderson, I'll keep trying to get them to our microphone, but it can't be done right now. John Hollenbeck at the other end of the corridor has Senator Reverdy Johnson of Maryland at his microphone. So over to Don Hollenbeck.
Senator, please, this side. Thank you. Senator Reverdy Johnson is one of the president's staunchest supporters in the Senate. Senator Johnson, how do you think the vote is going to go today? Will President Andrew Johnson be acquitted?
If justice survives, he will be exonerated. He must be. He's guiltless.
In your opinion, then, the charges against the president have not been proved?
Why, of course not. The impeachment article sent up by the House of Representatives are built upon an alleged refusal of the president to enforce a law.
You refer, of course, to the Tenure of Office Act?
Yes, sir, I do. This act was passed to prevent the president from removing from office any federal officer who was in sympathy with the radical Republicans in Congress.
Well, in your opinion, Senator Johnson, didn't the president defy the law when he removed the Secretary of War from his cabinet, Mr. Stanton?
Oh, no, sir. No, no. This was not a defiance by the president. He was merely attempting to test the constitutionality of the Tenure of Office Act in the courts. And in so doing, he deliberately walked into the trap set for him by his political enemies. He knew that this was precisely what the radical Republicans were waiting for. He knew that those wolves were drooling, the hyenas howling. But Andy Johnson was never the man to draw back from a fight. No, sir. Not Andy Johnson.
Senator, if President Lincoln were alive today, do you think the radical Republicans would have dared impeach him?
Why, certainly. This would have happened to Lincoln as it's now happening to Andrew Johnson. It's inevitable. Any man who stands for mercy and charity to the South is the marked enemy of the radical Republicans. And I thank God that Abraham Lincoln was spared this ignominy by the bullet of John Wilkes Booth.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. I've just been informed that Senator Grimes of Iowa, the senator who was so ill he wasn't expected to be present today, has arrived at the Senate entrance to the Capitol, so over to Ned Kalmer.
I'm standing just inside the Senate entrance. Senator Grimes' carriage has just drawn up outside the door. The Capitol guards had to clear a way for it through the pressing, excited crowds, and now the guards have lifted the senator's stretcher out of the carriage. It's the senator's doctor is by his side, cautioning the guards. Mrs. Grimes, the senator's wife, is still inside the carriage. The senator's stretcher is being brought through the entrance door now. The senator's face is white, ashen white. His eyes are closed. His breathing is laboring. He hardly looks alive. It seems impossible that this man will be able to vote. Yet here he comes. His doctor walking beside him.
Doctor, I beg your pardon, sir.
No. This is CBS. Oh, if your patient can spare you for just a moment, may we ask you a question?
No. I'm sorry. I've got my hands full. I'm sorry.
The doctor has gone past me, following the stretcher. Mrs. Grimes is just coming through the door now, her hands full of pillows. I'll try to... Mrs. Grimes, if you could stop just a minute. This is CBS. Could you tell us, Mrs. Grimes, is the senator any better?
My husband is very ill. He's been brought here against the advice of his physician. But he insisted... He feels that he must be here, even if it means his life.
Do you think he'll be able to vote?
If his heart is as strong as his will, he will vote. Oh, I'm so sorry. I must go with him.
Thank you, Mrs. Grimes. The senator's wife is going up to the caucus room now, and she... Wait a minute. I understand that Ken Roberts has at last been able to get Senator Henderson to the microphone. So, over to Ken Roberts.
Senator Henderson is standing beside me. Senator Henderson, have you made up your mind as to your vote? Will it be for conviction or acquittal? For the past 2 weeks, my life has been unbearable. I have been spied on, followed, hounded almost to death. I am a Republican.
Yes, but Senator...
My desk is piled high with telegrams, most of them calling for my vote for conviction. But I shall not be swayed by threats or bribes.
But your vote, Senator, how will you vote?
I have in my hand a telegram. It is from my state, Missouri, from St. Louis. I will read it to you. There is intense excitement here. Meeting call for tomorrow night. Can your friends hope that you will vote for conviction? If so, all will be well. Signed, E. W. Fox.
Senator,
I have already wired Mr. Fox my reply. Here it is. Say to my friends that I am sworn to do impartial justice according to law and evidence, and I will try to do it like an honest man.
Does that mean, Senator Henderson, that you have decided...
It means that I shall follow my conscience and not my party. I shall vote for acquittal.
Senator Henderson will vote not guilty. Back to the radio newsroom.
This is Quincy Howe. Henderson for acquittal. Ross still uncertain. Grimes here, but so ill that he may not have the strength to register his vote of not guilty. If Senator Grimes fails to answer his name when the vote is called, the radical Republicans will have achieved their purpose, the conviction and removal of Andrew Johnson as President of the United States and the elevation of Benjamin Wade to that
office.
There's the bell. The Senate is reconvening, so over to John Daly at the doors of the Senate gallery.
Chief Justice Salmon P. Chase has taken his place on the rostrum, taps his gavel now for order. Every seat but one in the Senate chamber is filled. That one, Senator Grimes' chair is empty, still empty, a little stirring in the seats, but the Chief Justice is demanding and has gotten order.
Grimes will make proclamation. Hear ye, hear ye. All persons are commanded to keep silence on pain of imprisonment while the Senate of the United States is sitting for the trial of the articles of impeachment against Andrew Johnson, President of the United States.
The Senate is now going through the preliminary routine incident to its convening as a court of impeachment. The curtain is going up on one of the great dramas of our time. For the first time in our history, a president of the United States stands impeached, waiting for the historic verdict of the Senate. The stage is set, and in a moment, the preliminaries will be over. The business of the court will then be ready to begin.
No objection. I will so order. Mr. Chief Justice.
Senator Williams of Oregon is calling for the floor.
I move that the Chief Justice, in directing the Secretary to read the several articles of impeachment, shall direct him to read the 11th article first.
The radical Republicans have moved to consider the 11th article of impeachment first. Quincy Howe is here with me. Quincy, what do you think is behind this last-minute maneuver?
It looks like bad news for President Johnson. You see, the 11th article, the so-called Stevens article, contains no specific accusations. It's a generalized article. Among other things, it accuses the president of having, in some public speech or other, denied the right of Congress to interfere in the internal affairs of the southern states. Now, this 11th article is known as the catch-all article. If the radical Republicans can snare a majority of senators into approving this 11th article, then the Johnson conviction seems almost certain.
And now a vote is being taken.
Those in favor, signify by aye.
Aye!
Those opposed, signify by no.
No! No!
The ayes in the majority, it is so ordered.
The president's enemies have won another round as the Senate adopts the order. Senator Edmunds of Vermont.
Gentlemen from Vermont.
I move that the Senate now proceed to vote upon the articles, according to the order of the Senate just adopted.
And Senator Edmunds has just moved that the Senate proceed to vote immediately on the 11th article. Senator Fessenden of Maine.
Gentlemen from Maine.
Before the motion is made, I move that voting be postponed for half an hour. I state the reason why I make this motion. Gentleman from Iowa, Mr. Grimes, is not in the chamber. I saw the gentleman last night, and he told me that he should certainly be here this morning. It was his... Will the honorable member permit me to interrupt him for a moment?
Johnson of Maryland.
He's here! He's on his way. He will be in the chamber in a moment. He's here!
Grimes is in the Senate chamber. Senator Grimes is here. One of the rare victories for President Johnson, for his vote will surely be for acquittal. Two of the Capitol guards are carrying him to his seat on a stretcher. He seems to be unconscious. I don't see how Senator Grimes can vote. It looks impossible. Now back to the Chief Justice.
The question is now the motion submitted by the senator from Vermont. The motion will be read. That the Senate now proceed to vote upon the articles according to the rules of the Senate. Is that an objection? It is so ordered. Before we proceed to the vote, by direction of the Senate,
Chief Justice admonishes the citizens and strangers in the galleries that absolute silence and perfect order are required. It will be a matter of unfeigned regret if any violation of the order of the Senate should necessitate the execution of its further order that the persons guilty of disturbance be immediately arrested. Senators, in conformity with the order of the Senate, the chair will now proceed to take the vote on the 11th article as directed by rule. The secretary will read the 11th article.
Article 11, that said Andrew Johnson, President of the United States, unmindful of the high duties of his office and of his oath of office, and in disregard of the Constitution and laws of the United States, did heretofore, to wit, on the 18th day of August...
The clerk continues to read the familiar 11th article of impeachment, accusing the president of high crimes and misdemeanors. The crucial decision will come soon, and the scene below is one of somber tension. The senators listen to the monotonous voice of the clerk as it drones on. The face of Senator Ross of Kansas is impassive, not a muscle moves. He just sits in his chair, staring forward, eyes unblinking, almost with the look of a man in an hypnotic state. What his thoughts may be, how his vote will be cast, is still the big question. The presidency of the United States may rest upon the vote that will be cast by this small, unassuming man from Kansas. Around the chamber are the other actors in this great drama. Sitting at the manager's table is Thaddeus Stevens, the congressman from Pennsylvania, majority leader of the House, and perhaps the bitterest enemy of President Johnson in this chamber today. No one will argue his claim to the title of father of impeachment. Across the chamber from Stevens, in the front row, is Charles Sumner, the senator from Massachusetts and the most powerful of the Senate radical Republicans. Behind Sumner, a few seats to his right, is Benjamin Wade, the senator from Ohio, the man who, within a matter of minutes, may become president of the United States. Wade is nervously twirling a gold penknife from his watch chain, and he, too, is watching Ross. Well, he's still expressionless, still motionless. He's still a sphinx, an imponderable and unknown. And now the clerk is just about to finish reading the 11th article. This is the hour, and remember, 36 votes will convict, 19 votes will acquit.
Whereby, said Andrew Johnson, President of the United States, did then, to wit, on the 21st day of February, A.D. 1868, at the city of Washington, commit and was guilty of a high crime and misdemeanor in office.
The secretary will call the roll.
Mr. Anthony.
Mr. Senator Anthony, I'll say you. Is the respondent, Andrew Johnson, President of the United States, guilty or not guilty of a high misdemeanor as charged in this article?
Guilty. Fired.
Not guilty.
Buckley.
Not guilty.
Cameron.
Guilty.
Cattell.
Guilty.
Chandler.
Guilty.
Cole.
Guilty.
The voting is as expected. No surprises yet.
Conklin.
Guilty.
Finesse.
Guilty.
Corbett.
Guilty.
Reagan.
Guilty.
Davis, not guilty. Dixon,
not guilty.
Doolittle,
not guilty.
9 guilty, 5 not guilty.
Drake,
guilty.
Edmonds,
guilty.
Perry,
guilty.
Fessenden,
not guilty.
Fowler,
guilty.
Senator Fowler has voted guilty. This is a completely surprising thing. It's unexpected. His vote seems
Senator
sure for acquittal.
I'll say you repeat your vote.
Not guilty.
Oh, it was a misunderstanding. Senator Fowler did not speak distinctly. His vote is not guilty. He is for acquittal, and the roll call now continues.
Guilty.
Senator Grimes is next. Here's one of the crucial votes that make the scales.
The senator need not rise if he is unable.
Chief Justice Chase has given Senator Grimes permission to vote from his seat, but Grimes is getting up. He is struggling to his feet, refuses to vote seated. He's up now, standing, holding onto his desk for support.
Not guilty.
And the gallery, both those for the president and both against him, are saluting the courage, the bravery of Senator Grimes. It must have been a superhuman effort. He drew himself up to his full height, stood erect and proud a moment, and then almost defiantly, he delivered his vote for acquittal. The vote is now 13 for conviction, 8 for acquittal, 36 are needed for conviction, 19 for acquittal, and now it's certain that the decisive vote will be that of Senator Ross of Kansas.
The secretary will proceed. Harlan,
guilty.
Henderson,
vote.
As he announced he would, Senator Henderson has defied his party and voted for acquittal.
Hendricks, not guilty. Howard,
guilty.
Howe,
guilty.
Johnson,
not guilty.
McCreary,
not guilty.
Morgan,
guilty.
Morrill of Maine,
guilty.
The vote now is 18 guilty, 12 not guilty, 36 needed for conviction, 19 for acquittal.
Guilty.
Senator Ross will cast the deciding vote.
Morton,
guilty.
Norton,
not guilty.
Nye,
guilty.
Patterson of New Hampshire.
Guilty.
Patterson of Tennessee.
Not guilty.
Pomeroy.
Guilty.
Ramsey.
Guilty.
Ross.
This is it. This is the deciding vote.
Ross.
Not guilty.
Ross has voted not guilty. Ross has voted for acquittal. President Johnson is acquitted, for the vote on the first 10 articles will now be a mere formality. The impeachment fails, and the president is saved. The radical Republicans have lost. The man who followed Lincoln is still able to fight for Lincoln's dreams and policies. Andrew Johnson is exonerated, and the policies of Abraham Lincoln are...
May 16, 1868. President Andrew Johnson is acquitted, and the first and only impeachment of a president of the United States fails.